Today on Movie Warlords, we discuss RoboCop and Winter's Tale. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, the show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
It's Valentine's Day tomorrow.
It is.
Hallmark.
Yes.
Shame on them.
Well, Valentine's not the worst makers. Of the Hallmark holidays.
I don't like Grandparents' Day. Teachers' Day. Bosses' Day.
Administrative professionals' Day. I mean, really.
Yeah.
Joe, you better hope your administrative professional is not listening to your podcast.
She better not be. She better be at bloody work.
Oh, God.
Listening to podcasts. She has no time for that. I know, but it's all these things get carried away. Valentine's is not the worst, but some people call it a holiday.
Not a holiday.
No, I know, but like we were talking about it at work today, and somebody was like, oh, it's one of my favourite holidays. I love Valentine's Day. I mean, it's not a holiday. What's wrong with you?
Well, it is President's Day weekend as well.
Yeah, but
that's a holiday.
That's not the 14th of February.
No.
So anyway, people get carried away with this stuff. Maybe we're too old and cynical.
30 Rock, which I absolutely love, has done a great episode on the anti-Valentine's Day. It's really good. People should check it out.
The anti-Valentine's Day.
She refuses to call it Valentine's Day.
I want to watch that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's jump into our reviews. We have RoboCop and Winter's Tale. We probably couldn't have two different movies if we tried. Mm-hmm. Where would you like to go first?
Ooh, A Winter's Tale.
All right.
Okay, so a burglar falls for an heiress as she dies in his arms. When he learns that he has the gift of reincarnation, he sets out to save her. This is directed by Akiva Goldsman, written by Akiva Goldsman, and based on the novel by Mark Halperin, and it stars Colin Farrell, Jessica Brown Findlay, and Russell Crowe. So unfortunately, I couldn't go to this one. I was sick, and I still have some of that sickness, hence my voice. But on paper, this looks like a movie I would absolutely love. So should I go out and rush out and see this on the weekend? Yes, D.
So, you know, just like...
By the way, I can't believe the two of you went together. That's quite sweet.
Well, it wasn't like we were holding hands. You know?
I think it's
and having two straws, two straws from the same Coke.
Although we did have champagne and cake together while we were there.
There was, yes. Champagne and
little... You didn't tell me that when you came home.
Yes,
well, before this... I'm not going to tell you that I was out having champagne with other people while you were at home sick.
Yes, and brownies. And I don't like brownies, and these were delicious.
Who gave them to you?
Yeah, we were bribed, I think, by the PR agency.
The PR agency, really? Which was showing the screening. Yeah, I had champagne and brownies before the movie.
That's so cute. I noticed you didn't bring one home for me.
I brought you Tivana.
You did bring me Tivana.
Thank you.
Okay.
You did. Sorry for that tangential moment.
Peach Tranquil
You did bring me tea.
So, Winter's Tale is based on a book which is beloved by a lot of people. I mean, I know now at least two people who are obsessed with the book. I mean, they've said they've read it, you know, like multiple times, more than five times
each. And it's an old book.
And it's an older book, yes. So, I understand this movie... Yeah, this story has a lot of resonance for a lot of people. But when you're transferring a book or a story which is so, you know, surreal, fantasy kind of based onto the screen, you know, it cannot not seem silly and preposterous. And it asks you to believe the impossible and take the leap.
More than Labor Day?
Yeah, way more than Labor Day.
Okay.
And you know what? I did take the leap. And I think this, whether you like this movie or not, is completely going to depend on whether you're willing to take that leap or not. Because the movie is patently filled, I think, with very, very preposterous situations. I mean, there are things which belie the laws of physics and belie the laws of time. And maybe I'm making too much of it.
Is it time travel or is it just reincarnation?
Just felt like magic.
it's kind of
so is it back and forth, surrealist. Like about time?
Well, the main character lives on through 100 years and doesn't change, right? And I'm not giving anything away. And so, you know, it's the same character and he's just forgotten what happened 100 years, but he hasn't visibly aged. So the movie asks you to make a lot of leaps in terms of, it's fundamentally a story of good versus evil, and it sounds horribly hackneyed even as I'm saying it. But you either buy that or you don't, and I struggled with it, and then I gave in, and I bought into it.
So you liked it?
I did not hate it.
Okay, Joe.
Whereas I resolutely, no. I mean, oh dear, is all I can say about this movie. It just didn't work for me because of all the reasons that you've mentioned, Yazdi. It has, I don't know if it's a spoiler to say that there's, you know, magic and demons and things like that in there, but they're all kind of thrown in at, seemingly at random. There's nothing leading up to the fact that, you know, there's a character in here who is, he's a demon. I mean, there's no other way of saying it. You know, there are characters in here that represent angels and nothing, just nothing worked for me because there was no explanation for it. And I'm not a big fan of these kind of whimsical, you know, type stories where things just happen. I need explanations. I need reasons. And
I'm going to love it. I know I'm going to love it.
When things just happen, it's like,
was it a Holy Motors moment?
No,
not at all. I mean,
too fantastical.
It's more logical than that.
There's a string to it. There's a narrative. It's just, it just didn't work for me at all. And I think ultimately it was just too dull. It never had any high points or low points for me.
Really? So will I love it?
I think you will love it. Yeah. I'm really eager to. Oh, go on. Do you think Rashmi will love it?
No, I don't think you will. I don't think you will. I think there's a romantic thread in here that doesn't really work.
Oh.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Sorry, I mean, this, I'm just coming to get at it from kind of, you know, tech wireless.
Okay, Joe's back. Point, but. Joe's back. Labor Day Joe has left. Yes. He left in the last episode, and regular Joe's back.
Just for those who might not remember, in our last podcast, I was the fluffy, mushy one who liked Labor Day. This episode, yeah, Winter's Tale, not for me.
I'm really eager now to read the book because, you know, so many people have said so many good things about it. But the way I saw the movie is it really breaks down the story to the bare atomic essences of it. So the characters are not just, you know, good and bad. They're either angels and demons.
Right.
You know, so it really breaks everything down to the very fundamental, you know, constructs, if you will. And
as opposed to we all have a little bit of both in us.
Correct. Okay. And I think the movie chose to literalize some of those. And so that's why it comes off looking a little silly sometimes. But I like that it's all very metaphorical. It's all about, you know, I mean, either you're going to find this horribly corny and cliched or you're going to embrace it, which is that your purpose in life is to do good things.
Right.
And, you know, you will not get freedom from that unless you do what you're supposed to do, you know, during your time on earth. So it's playing for all these big themes, and some of them work, some of them don't. I think what's fundamentally what's fundamentally underlying this whole thing is this very grandly romantic, and I don't mean romantic in a loving sense, but romantic in a grand
dreamy
sense. Kind of sense. There's this love story underneath it, which I bought that. Maybe it's because of the actors involved, or maybe whatever it was, I bought that. I think one of the problems with the movie is that it's condensing a very, very, you know, a lot of content into a 2-hour film. And it's actually two separate stories separated by 100 years. And it really shortchanges the second story. I mean, the second story doesn't even take root, I think. You know, it almost comes off a little bit like an epilogue when it should have really taken root. And because you kind of get payoffs, some of the emotional payoffs from the first story happen in the second story, but the second story is just transpired in the last 5 minutes. And so you don't really get that investment, I thought.
So this is scoring so badly on Rotten Tomatoes. It's at 13%. Oh, okay, well, it's gone up to 13 now. But I wanted to ask you about Colin Farrell. He seems to be doing a lot of these like big hero type roles. Like recently we saw him in Saving Mr. Banks, where he played the father, where he was Mr. Banks. Does it fit? Or do we want bad boy Colin back?
I mean, this is not too dissimilar from the Saving Mr. Banks, Colin Farrell. You know, it's a period piece in places, and I think he fits the role very well. And I can't really knock the actors for anything in this movie. I think they all did a nice job of what it is that they had to do.
And this has a great cast. It's got Russell Crowe. Mm. It's got...
Sorry, I didn't even mention who was it. Yes, Colin Farrell, Russell Crowe, Jennifer Connelly, I can't even speak now, and William Hurt.
And Lady Sybil from Downton Abbey is in it.
Jessica Brown Findlay.
Yeah, she's the romantic lead. Is that fair to say?
Yes. I can't believe she died in Downton to do this.
Yes.
Anyway.
I hope she didn't give up on Downton for this. But, I mean, let me just give you an example, okay? I think unless you're doing Lord of the Rings or you're doing Game of Thrones, you know, the sudden appearance of a flying horse, you know, into an otherwise very conventional story is going to elicit giggles from the audience. And, you know, I don't know how else do you place a flying horse into a story like this? I think there is no other way to do it. You have to let the audience laugh. And they play it completely straight. Right. The actors do in the book. And after a while, you know, you kind of, I kind of took it in my stride.
I think,
took the story in its stride.
I think that's where things went wrong for me, because I did go into this without a knowledge of the source material. I hadn't even seen the trailer, so I had no idea what we were watching here. I thought the movie was going to be very different. And then suddenly you have one or two events that are, you know, supernatural, and they seemingly come from nowhere, because the movie up until that point is telling, you know, and they occur early on. So I can't knock the movie for not introducing them early enough in the story. It's just, there's no context. The flying horse is a great example, because, you know, here we are, we're watching, you know, Colin Farrell's character being pursued by some bad guys. And then, you know, a horse appears from nowhere and a horse flies and gets him out of a tough spot. And I'm just, at that point, I'm like, WTF? It's like...
See, but I thought, go on.
Well, no, and then we learn a little bit more, but, you know, it turns out... Well, I'm not going to get into spoilers, just in case you want to watch it, but it's those kind of leaps that really... They come from nowhere, and for me, as a viewer, they take me out of the experience, because I did have the laugh reaction. I did have the, what? This doesn't make sense. I'm bored now.
See, but this is why I want to read the book, because... You know, the book is so well written. So it must work within the confines of the book. And the more I thought about it, I think the whole movie is very, it's a very literal observation of things which are only meant to be symbolic. I think the horse, the flying horse, really represents those people in your life who come and help you in your time of need. And that's what the horse is. The horse,
I don't know where you got that.
The horse really represents.
Where did you get that?
Because the horse always shows up. It's the one thing that this wretched character can rely on in things which are going wrong in his life.
I like seeing
right, but stories there is nothing horses. To imply it's metaphorical.
Oh, I think the whole movie is metaphorical, no?
There's nothing there to give you
we're
that.
We're talking to Tagwala, who needs everything literal, remember?
I do need to understand what I'm seeing. And for me, at least, there was nothing in the lead-up to those events that suggested to me that there were anything other than this is what's happening.
Can I ask a question? Yes. Is it at all similar to Cloud Atlas?
No.
Okay.
No, I think Cloud Atlas is a lot more cerebral than this is. This is not nearly as cerebral as that.
I think it might play along some of the themes that you thought Cloud Atlas was going to.
Right. Like
when you saw Cloud Atlas trailer, you know, interlinking of lives, purpose, bigger, you know,
that's what I wanted out of
universal
Cloud Atlas
type of stuff. I think some of those themes are in this movie.
And I think they pay off. So they are connected. So there are two seemingly unconnected stories, and you eventually find out that
I'm going to go and see it.
Oh, you might.
I won't be there.
Okay, let's wind this one up. Joe.
Just not a movie that worked for me at all. I didn't hate it. I just was very bored by it. And it was just one of those movies that didn't make a lot of sense. It, you know, it had a sweet tone to it. I really enjoyed seeing the actors do their thing. I think everyone in this movie did a very nice job. And, you know, I guess ultimately I have to acknowledge that I did buy the romance, even though to me it all seemed a little too fluffy, too short-lived, and just, you know, the plot didn't work for me. So I can't give this anything more than a 4 out of 10.
Oh, I know. I don't think you've ever gone that low, have you?
I don't do that very often, but the movie just confused and bored me. Sorry, guys.
Yes, Dee.
The ingrate, he drank the champagne, he had the brownie, and then he gives a 4 out of 10.
That's right.
I'm incorruptible. Unbribable. Oh.
Well, I'm very corruptible.
That's what we heard.
So I actually had a very similar reaction to this movie than I did with The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, which on the face of it, a lot of people found very obvious and contrived and not amounting to much. Mm. And I think, you know, this is the kind of movie that will either settle into your bones or it'll rattle endlessly to the point of annoyance. And I think most people, it's really rattling. It's really bothering people. I mean, Russell Crowe has a really strange accent in this movie. And, you know, there is an uncredited big name actor in the movie who shows up suddenly twice in the movie. And you're like, what is this person doing here? And, you know, so there's enough in this movie to keep things going interesting and engaging. And, you know, there's a scene in the movie about a furnace which is threatening to have this whole home, this whole castle implode because the furnace is clogged up. And you should not believe this, but I completely bought that scene. I was like, okay, you know, finally this girl's father finally embraces this guy because he fixed their furnace for crying out loud. So I don't know.
It's that manly man thing again.
Yeah,
you can't resist a man doing odd jobs around the house.
So it's odd enough and curious enough that I kind of enjoyed it. I'm going to give it. Actually, this movie also reminded me a lot of a movie we all saw recently, which is The Book Thief.
Oh.
And I might go a little bit further and say I actually might have liked it. I think it was more sincere than The Book Thief was. It was not so blatantly trying to get at your emotions.
Oh.
But so I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
I'm going to go watch this one.
I'll be at the Lego movie.
Okay. All right. To our next film.
Yes, RoboCop.
So in 1987, and I hate to say this, more than a quarter century ago, the original RoboCop movie came out. It was directed by Paul Verhoeven. And it stands firm even now as a considerable cinematic achievement, precisely for its biting satire on future corporate worlds and for its unforgiving commentary on man versus machine, and also for its gleeful, unapologetic violence. I mean, this movie is regarded as a classic by almost any film lover. And the film was set in a future rundown Detroit where a dying cop gets reassembled from his remaining mortal parts into a machine. And he returns back to the police force to take on corporate villains. But eventually his human elements start to surface, you know, from within his cyborg body. And that, you know, that was kind of the premise of RoboCop. Well, now year in 2014 is the new version of RoboCop. And I guess it's even futile to ask why at this point, but for whatever reason, it's here. And Swedish actor Joel Kinnaman plays the lead role, which was made popular in the original film by Peter Weller. And this update is directed by Jose Padilla, who previously helmed the Elite Squad movies. And the script is by Joshua Zetumer. And they also give credit to the two original screenwriters of the 1987 film, Edward Neumeier and Michael Miner. The film co-stars Gary Oldman, Michael Keaton, Abby Cornish, and Jackie Earle Haley. I didn't get a chance to see this movie, but I know the both of you did. And I know, Joe, you bow at the Church of RoboCop. I mean, you love RoboCop.
So, I mean, just before we jump into the review, you know, there are movies that are kind of formative in terms of your taste. And this is one of those movies for me. It was a movie that came out, I think, at the point in life when I first acquired a VCR. And so I went to the video store and I connected two VCRs together. I made a pirate copy. I made a pirate copy of Robo. You know, when did Robo come up?
You were like tech it.
Well, 87. So yeah, I was still a teenager at the time. And yeah, I made a pirate copy of it. And I watched it and I watched it and I watched it and I watched it and I watched it. And, you know, it's a movie that I can actually recite line by line. I mean, it's terrific. I actually forced Rush me to rewatch it. Because you hadn't seen it, or you had seen it, but you didn't remember it.
Well, I had seen it, probably with one eye open.
So the original RoboCop was very precious to me, and let's see what Rashmi thought of the remake.
Well, I thought you were going to give your review first.
No, you...
Okay, so I really enjoyed the day before when we watched the original. I thought that really did stand up to the test of time. It was a little bit hammy, of course, and the technology, you know, you can see how far we've come with CGI. But it was a really good movie. So walking into the new RoboCop, I would say overall I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was an appropriate updating of the source material. And I even liked how the story had been enhanced or embellished a little bit to give it more breadth. So I liked the fact that we got to know more about Alex Murphy, the character, before he became RoboCop. So I actually felt more invested, but it did make me laugh that RoboCop is made in China.
So, yeah, I mean, I was actually very nervous watching this movie. I don't think the original deserved a remake just yet, but, you know, I guess it has been, you know, quarter century. So there's a generation of kids who are ready to receive an updated version and for whom the original will no longer work. Where do I start? First of all, I wish they hadn't gone the PG-13 route.
I know.
I think a movie like RoboCop, in order to, if you're going to pay any kind of homage to the original movie, you know, keep within it the elements that made it such a classic, because it was so much more than a standard sci-fi flick. It was not about technology, and it was a political satire. Mm-hmm. It was incredibly violent, as you've already mentioned, and it was a very stylish, bitingly real portrait of America at the time. This movie, I think, touches on some of those themes, especially the political ones. You know, there's definitely a bit of a jab at, I think, the right-wing politics of the current era. But let's take it at face value. This was not attempting to be as sophisticated as the original RoboCop. I think it had a bit of problem in production, and they ended up doing what they could with the script that they had. And I think they've done a good job. It's a credible action movie. It explores a few different themes. It makes RoboCop certainly a lot more human. The Peter Weller RoboCop, remember, he was effectively lobotomized when he became RoboCop, and it was bits of his personality trying to fight through, whereas this RoboCop from day one has personality to the extent that the part of the goal of rebuilding him is to return him to his family so that he can live a normal family life. So it plays a little differently with some of those themes. But overall, it's a decent enough action flick. The story itself is good enough. There is a bit of a plot hole, which was pointed out to us by one of the other critics. But if you can forgive the movie for that, and I think it was just one of those scenes that just got dropped, missing line of dialogue, that kind of thing, it ends up being a good movie with a very satisfying kind of feel and satisfying conclusion.
But it's different to the original. I mean, what I found interesting was that they made the choice to lose that incredible, clever, witty satire and commentary on corporations, you know, from the first one, and make this more about the avenging of Alex Murphy's death. And I think, like you said, Joe, the story itself is a little bit disjointed and the plot hole, obviously. But what struck me was there's this very elaborate beginning, which I thought was going to be a subplot in the Middle East. Very elaborate. Very, very elaborate. And then it didn't go anywhere. So I don't know what's happened. There's obviously been a decision in the editing room, I think, to make a different movie to maybe what they started out with. I don't know.
No, I mean, I think that was its attempt at being satirical in the way that the original movie was satirical.
Right, but we got this really elaborate plot with, like, characters who had relationships with each other and names and things at stake.
Yeah, but I know where you're going. This is kind of difficult for us to talk about without
getting too much. So that was a bit strange to me. But, you know, again, what it's got going for it, great visual effects. I mean, CGI, fantastic, and really good sound editing. I love the noises related to the way the robot actually moved, which I think is absolutely critical in this movie.
Yeah, well, we saw it in IMAX. So, you know, the IMAX experience, they definitely cranked it up, and it was, you know, a very physical soundtrack. I mean,
it used to do the noises all the time.
Booms and bangs. I know. Well, that was...
You can do RoboCop. Do RoboCop.
Oh, no, God. I'm not doing RoboCop.
Do RoboCop.
Go on.
I'll do it later, dear. Wink, wink.
After I've gone.
Well, it is Valentine's Day tomorrow.
So, you know, I think this particular... Yes, he's tickled by that.
Yeah.
Do RoboCop, do RoboCop. Oh, God.
Remember, RoboCop is amputated from the neck down. So, yeah, there's no RoboCop in the bedroom. This RoboCop was just a very different take on the idea. And I think they were trying to make it more about almost some of the themes that were explored in the RoboCop sequel, RoboCop 2, which was, again, not as well received, but that movie explored some of these themes about a man being a machine and what that means for him, you know, and the rest of his life. You know, it's a big struggle. The original RoboCop, again, he had his memories wiped out, and so he effectively was who he was programmed to be, whereas this RoboCop seems to fight his programming from day one. He almost doesn't want to be RoboCop, and I think they're playing with that kind of idea of what it must be like to be blown apart and then reassembled with this mechanical apparatus around you, and what that does. And so they almost go the opposite way, where they take a personality filled RoboCop and slowly erode away his humanity until, you know. It's just a different spin on the whole idea. But honestly, the movie was enjoyable. And, you know, as a huge fan of the original, I was walking in there expecting to hate this one. I didn't hate it.
I think one of the reasons why, you know, the original is such a cult movie is because, you know, it's the violence. It was so ultra-violent and it was so unapologetic about its violence. It was not making any excuses. And I know there are commercial considerations, and I know that's the only reason the studio decided to make a remake, but they should have gone for a hard R. They should have amped up the violence even more.
Yeah, especially with today's CGI, like with the technology today, you could have a really, really, you know, decent action movie. But that's not going to sell action figures.
Or bring in the teenagers on opening weekend.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I understand the commercial reasons for that, but it ends up, you know, a movie that's somewhat defanged compared to the original. You know, that said, I hope it would inspire people to go watch the original, because they, you know, the movie actually stands up pretty well, as Rashmi said at the beginning. I mean, the special effects, are, you know, the stop motion Ed 209, you know, big military robot thing, that doesn't quite work as well as it did back in the day. But, you know, the rest of the movie, good, I think, is not, you know, like I say, for a science fiction movie, it's not very reliant on special effects, and other than the ultraviolence. But, you know, it's not a spaceships and, you know, sci-fi type movie. You know, it's a very physical 1980s looking world that they're in.
Yeah.
I think for those coming in, you know, without knowing anything about anything, they just think it's a new movie which is coming out.
Yeah, I think it's gonna absolutely. I think Joel Kinnaman, he's really good. He was a really good RoboCop. Really good actor. I hope we'll see more of him.
He's a lot on TV, but carry on.
And I just want to say the other thing, it reminded me a lot of Terminator.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, for me, it reminded me more,
a lot of those robots, you know, like...
Well, in terms of its visual look and feel, it reminded me a lot of Iron Man. You know, this RoboCop can run around and leap and jump. And you know, he's a very physical RoboCop compared to the original RoboCop, who was, you know, weighed down by this huge, heavy robotic suit. You know, he clunked everywhere. He couldn't jump. You know, this RoboCop can, you know, leap buildings in a single bound kind of thing. I mean, not quite, but he's very much more agile than the old RoboCop.
You ready to wind this one up?
Do you want to score it?
Yeah, Joe.
So, yeah, as I said, I walked in ready to hate this movie. I didn't hate it. I think it's an interesting take on the old RoboCop. I wish they had maybe... If you're going to do a remake, stay a little bit more true to the original. It's almost like comparing the Total Recall from last year with the Arnold Schwarzenegger Total Recall. They kind of missed the point of the original movie in so many different ways.
Again, a Paul Verhoeven.
And that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And they missed the cleverness of the original movies, and they've done something more literal with it. But nonetheless, you know, it's an action flick. It's a sci-fi action flick. And it's reasonably enjoyable, Friday night out. I don't think this will stand the test of time, but it's certainly opened the door to a bunch of sequels in this universe. And that's not something I'm going to hate, at least on the face of it. So, 8 out of 10 is a little generous, but I'll give it a 7.
Yeah, I would recommend this to fans of the original and new moviegoers. It has some good ethical questions, and once again, it broaches that subject of existentialism. I'm 7 out of 10 too. Good movie. You missed one.
Yeah.
It's the reviews are absolutely mixed. I mean, right now on Rotten Tomatoes, it's at 49%.
Oh.
Well, you know, that's 50-50. That means 50% positive reviews, 50% negative, and I can see why. If you're trying to draw comparisons with the original, it doesn't hold a candle to it.
Yeah, and I wonder, a lot of movies suffer from that. You know, you're like, oh, this is based on this great book that I loved, or this is based on, you know, this all. And I think you automatically, you know, view the movie from a very different perspective if you have a certain expectation. So, yeah.
So all we need now is the remake of Basic Instinct, and we've hit all of Paul Verhoeven's... Showgirls. Is it Showgirls?
We should do a remake of Showgirls.
But that was bad.
Even more campy than that. Is that possible?
I honestly believe there's a Terminator remake coming.
Yeah, no doubt. But
with the technology, I mean... The RoboCop, the production was fabulous, I have to say. We didn't even talk about Michael Keaton and Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman. Good acting.
Yeah, but again, everyone was kind of better than they needed to be in a movie with this kind of writing. But that's okay here, right? I mean, you put these fine actors in these situations and they all hit their notes.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. mail@movieworlds.com. Tell us what you thought of these movies. We'd love to hear from you. twitter.com/moviewallers, facebook.com/moviewallers as well. Until our next episode, it's too many movies, too little time. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.